Hello, diners and travelers and cooks and bakers everywhere. You're listening to On the Menu, this time with Ann Haig solo at the mic here. We have our first caller already on the line, and I'm looking at this delicious book called The Art of the Dessert, written by Ann Amernick. I had questions to ask you, too. And first of all, I wanted to say that this book is so gorgeous. Let's mention the photographer on it.
Oh, okay. That would be great. Taryn Z.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful stuff. I looked at the back cover, and you couldn't have found four absolutely famous endorsements. Patrick O'Connell at the Inn at Little Washington, Daniel Boulou, who's recently been on the show, Francois Payard, who also is just recently, and Gail Gand, who we'll have to get on there when we're in Chicago next time, raving about this book. And I thought, oh, do you know how many baked books I get anymore? I don't know why everybody's baking, but they certainly are. But I looked at yours, and yours is different. Among other things, first of all, it's all-encompassing, isn't it?
I would say yes, it probably is, yeah.
The introduction, it's right after the introduction, my trucks.
Yes.
I was just blown away with them. I mean, you're claiming that everybody should use grams. I have debated this with people writing cookbooks because people don't like to use grams. Why do you recommend that they use grams?
You know, what I'm saying is, I would never say you must use grams. I didn't use them when I first started to bake. I mean, it never occurred to me. It was only after I started working with French pastry chefs that everything was in grams, and I'd say, show them my cups measured, and they'd say, you know, grams.
Right.
And I found, as the years have gone on, the use of grams is so much more exact than a cup measure. I determined this in the bakery. It isn't to say to you, in all honesty, that I never, ever, ever have used a cup measure. The problem that I've seen, especially in recent years, is just as an example with eggs.
Yes, tell us about the eggs. We have this ongoing discussion of eggs on the show. We had Tish Boyle saying that you should always store your eggs with the round side up. And I kept looking, and you didn't buy, none of the cartons of eggs had the round side up. And they had the pointy side up.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so tell us what your take on eggs here. The difference.
What I've determined is, I saw it specifically when I used to make, and even years ago when I was doing a large quantity Genoise, and the classic recipe from the pastry chefs from wherever I had worked, it was 32 large eggs to a kilo of sugar and a kilo of flour, something like that. You know, that's what we're talking, quantity baking. And for a while, that seemed fine. I never had a problem. And suddenly, I was having a terrible time with the cakes. I could not figure out what was going on because here I had always thrown in 32 eggs, no problem. And it wasn't until I started to weigh the eggs that I saw this incredible, it was really amazing that a large egg is supposed to weigh 50 grams shelled, that's without the shell. The yolk is supposed to weigh 20 grams, the white is supposed to weigh 30 grams. Now, that's 50 grams. If a recipe is calling for four eggs, that's 200 grams. But if you were to take some large eggs that you get and weigh them, you know, after they're shelled, you might get 220 grams.
That's amazing. Even,
and it is, and try it. And I think they didn't believe me. I think Pam Charles, my publisher at first, was a little skeptical. Because I can assure you, they did not want to. Nobody wanted to use grams.
Yeah, I know. I just,
you know, yeah. They say the thing is, Americans don't like to use grams.
This is true.
So, and I understand that. I do understand it. But what I've also noted, you know, passing over, you know, beyond eggs, try going into a store and going around buying several different sets of dry cup measures. And then go and put flour, regular all-purpose flour,
right,
whatever, in all the different cups, and then weigh them and see if you get the same weight on all of them. So there again is this discrepancy.
Oh yeah, you know, you can almost just see looking and you opening a carton of eggs, you can almost see that some, you know, if you're going to select two to boil, you can just see some are bigger than others.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, it's probably the overall weight of the whole carton that, that people are, some machine
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think they're graded. I mean, I if you look in the book, there's that, I thought it was really rather cute, the little Jiffy Way scale that they must have used years ago.
Oh, yeah?
It's in there somewhere, a black and white shot. That is, it's a little scale that it's marked medium, large, extra large, jumbo, or something like that. And it shows how many of them to a, we were trying to figure out what it meant because it has different numbers on it. But the point is, it's true of almost anything. Once you get into grams, and you need a gram scale, you need the scale for that. But once you have it, I can tell you it changes the way you work. And I know that, this is a hard thing to for people to accept. That is why I put other measurements in there.
Right.
You know, I didn't feel, and in the beginning, I did send it up as cups. It's probably why the book was a bit delayed coming out since the, you know, Frank Ruta and I opened Palena Restaurant, and then 4 months later we opened the bakery.
Now,
and
where so the, is Palena is a wonderful restaurant, by the way. I've been.
Thank you.
Just great. Did you just win something?
Frank just won the Beard
That's
Award.
That's it.
Yes.
I knew, because we were there. That's right. Mm-hmm. He got best where? Midwest?
Mid-Atlantic.
Mid-Atlantic.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Right. That's my area. Well, congratulations to him.
Thanks.
I love that. Where is he originally from?
He is from McKeesport, Pennsylvania.
I knew that. Mm-hmm. Tell him I'm going to call him. I'm going to do a profile of him.
All right.
Okay. Back to your book now. You are the pastry chef at Palena.
Yes, uh-huh.
But you have
I have stepped back a little bit because I'm now trying to go out and do whatever needs to be done to get the book out there.
I was really impressed with the fact that you have such a vast richness of experience in pastry making. And you basically say in your introduction that you want to help other people learn how to bake. And if you inspire anybody with this book, this is the purpose of your book.
I think it is, yes.
It says, I have spent my life's career learning what I regard as the art of the pastry chef, and now I think my greatest challenge is to pass on what I have learned to people who love to bake, as well as to people who are new to this form of cooking. Right?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I think that's admirable.
Well, what would be really admirable is if I can do it.
Right.
I mean, that's the key, is to really, because I am very serious about it and sincere. I mean, I can't tell you the number of people that have come up to me and said, how can you give away all your recipes? Well, a recipe is a recipe. That's not the issue. It's trying to explain how to make it work, how to make it happen. Because I've heard people say they bought books and the recipes don't work.
Right.
And I don't want that to happen here. That's one of the reasons that I made the decision in this book to be repetitive by including in each recipe every component of it. And that means repeating sweet dough, repeating the pâte brisée, repeating a buttercream.
And then people don't have to go running around for.
Well, that happened in special desserts, and it hurt the use of the book. It becomes too difficult. People want to look, I believe they want to look at a recipe and say, oh, that looks daunting, but let me try it, or oh, that doesn't seem to have too many steps, maybe I can do that one. With some, you know, my other book, perhaps they just read a recipe, it looked like it was one page long. It wasn't. You know, it was each instruction said, go to page X and find this recipe. Go to page Y and find this one. And that's one of the reasons I changed the format here, adding pictures as well, which I didn't have in the other book.
Oh, well,
the pictures are critical, I believe.
I think so, too.
A book. Yeah.
And you have a lot of old standbys in this book.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I'd say this book goes back to the beginning, because that seems to be, in the end, what people want. I think you can offer very trendy, you know, cutting edge perhaps, but I don't, that's not what sells.
Right. You're probably right. I mean, usually you see desserts that have pieces flying off and the plate and sort of high wire acts.
Well, that and the, just in general, anything that is, I mean, it doesn't say that, it doesn't mean there's no place for very new, cutting edge flavors and combinations. Of course there is, but it's been my experience that those desserts don't really move
right.
in a restaurant.
Here we have homemade honey grams.
Yes.
You know, people are making marshmallows like crazy nowadays.
Right, exactly. And that was, you know, the honey grams. I wasn't going to do a s'more because
okay.
I had seen it too many times, you know, done. And I thought, but I could never find a decent recipe for honey grams. I couldn't find it anywhere. And it wasn't, it's odd. I found this old book that was some baker's book. I mean, it started at 100 pounds of flour. and I just took that, that was the starting point. And then just kept going down, down, down. And then I adjusted and changed because there was a texture I wanted. I mean, listen, I love, you know, honey grams that you can buy in a box. They're great. They are great. It's hard to beat, but these have a certain crunchiness to them. There's a real substance to these. And I thought, well, why not add them? You know, it took me so long to work out this recipe, put it in there.
Well, I mean, I think that's great. And, you know, you're talking about going back to the old books. I'm looking at the frontis photo with all the old cookbooks on the shelf.
Yes.
And I know some of these.
Yeah.
My mother had this breads, rolls, and sweet doughs.
Is that right?
Yeah.
eBay did very well by me.
Oh, so that's,
I mean,
how
that's
you got
the key.
These.
But I love the old books. They're amazing when you read them, and then you say to yourself, why don't we see these recipes today? Well, you try a few of them, and you understand maybe why. Because some perhaps don't work. But what they were for me was a jumping off point, because forever, from the time I started baking, I could never come up with what I consider to be that really light and yet very chocolatey cake.
Yeah, could you hold on to that thought while we take a break for commercials?
Certainly.
Anne, great. We'll take a break.
All righty.
T1 Internet access wasn't affordable to many companies as little as 2 years ago. Service providers were charging in the thousands of dollars, keeping the benefits of a T1 connection out of most companies' reach. ASP Station is now offering the faster and more reliable T1 service at a price significantly less than 2 years ago. The speed of a T1 for both sending and receiving data is simply amazing and will change the way your business runs indefinitely. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. Call ASP Station now for details. 412-661-6001. 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go fast.
Call ASP Station now for details. 412-661-6001. That's 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go, fast.
Hi, everyone. This is Tom Rita, the networking guy and host of Pittsburgh's most unique business show, Business in the Fast Lane. We're on every Saturday morning from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on The Edge, 1550 a.m. For the past 24 months, we've been bringing the best and the brightest into our studios to offer you ideas, advice, and real-world examples to help you grow your business. So save those honeydews for the afternoon and join me, Tom Rita, every Saturday morning from 12 to 1 on The Edge for Business in the Fast Lane, Pittsburgh's best kept secret.
Hey, kid, over here, inside your radio. Name's Ralph. I'm an energy hog. Hey, if you're going to waste energy in your home, I'm going to pig out on it. Anyway, I got a deal for you. There's this new website called energyhog.org. Forget about it. It teaches kids how to get rid of us energy hogs. So you promise not to log on to energyhog.org, and I promise not to eat your radio. Deal?
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
EnergyHog.org. Forget.
Wow. Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann Haig. On the line, I have two guests. Scott Jensen just joined us.
Thank you.
How are you? And Ann Amernick was talking about her dessert book called The Art of the Dessert, which sounds a bit formal, actually, Ann, doesn't it?
It does. It went through several name changes. Nobody knew quite what to call it.
I see. Well, it's a smashing good book. And if you like desserts, Scott, this leads you through everything just beautifully. Listeners, you want to get a hold of this book and go directly to our website, which is 15... No, it's not. I just changed. It's on the menu, www.onthemenuradio.com. That's right. Ed's nodding his head. We just had a station changeover. And do you have a website for the restaurant, which we can also direct people to?
Yes, I have two different ones. I have a Polaina restaurant is www.polainarestaurant.com. That's P as in Paul, A-L-E-N-A, restaurant.com. And also there's www.annamernick.com.
Oh, great. So we got double the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One is more dedicated to the book. The AnnAmernick.com is more dedicated to the book.
Well, and again, we love this book. And we have another book which is a little smaller, the Stubbs Barbecue Cookbook. Tell us a little bit about this bigger-than-life guy. I mean, he literally was 6'4", right?
He was. He was about 6'9" with his cowboy hat on, and he always wore a hat. But he was, he grew up in simple means down here in southeast Texas and never really called himself a chef but a cook. But his cooking was so good, you know, hundreds and thousands of people, famous people, musicians, unfamous people, plumbers, just loved his food. So I followed him out of a kind of a corporate job up in the Northeast.
Yeah, I wanted to know, how did you get involved with this? I mean, he died when? A couple years ago?
He died 11 years ago.
Oh, that long?
Yeah, we started the company almost 18 years ago. He, myself, and two of his other friends started the barbecue sauce company called Stubbs Legendary Kitchen. And we were just thrilled with how well he could cook and how well he could explain all of his recipes. And we thought, well, this is a perfect way of moving back down to Texas and starting a business. So three of us did, and we started as a partnership with Stubb himself.
And he, I mean, here are the photos. You have black and white, and you have color photos. Him with Dolly Parton is a trip, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, he had this little honky-tonk place out in West Texas, and then he eventually moved to Austin, Texas. But he loved music so much, he'd always go to anyone's gig, either a big gig or a small gig, and he'd always invite them back over to his restaurant to play later for a plate of food. And he'd get big people like Dolly Parsons. You get
Muddy Waters. You had all those people.
Muddy Waters. And you got Tom T. Hall was one of his good friends, and Johnny Cash. So it was really an extraordinary time.
Now, and we were talking about your book, about how you wanted to share your recipes with people. Well, actually, this is the point of the Stubbs Barbecue Cookbook, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, he never knew how to be selfish about anything. And that's one of the endearing things why we put such a large introduction about his life is, Stubb would give the shirt off his back or the last plate of food away to someone that was hungry. And he used to always say, I was born hungry and had to learn how to cook and feed people. And that was kind of the message he gave, was how to feed people, not only food, but, touching their soul with love and happiness, if you will. So the book's got 50-plus recipes, but it's also got a lot of really good kind of, chicken soup for the soul kind of stuff.
Yes, and it's also coordinating with this, is again, and back to where you're sharing your recipes, he put his in a bottle. So he has all these sauces and marinades, which, by the way, I have been testing out, Scott, and they are really fabulous.
Yeah, that's where we started first, was the barbecue sauces and the marinades and the spice mixes. The restaurant, and we opened a restaurant about 11 years ago down here in Austin because Stubb needed a restaurant. He had his place in Lubbock that closed, and a few years later he had a place in Austin, but that closed 8 or 9 years after he opened it. But the sauces is where it all started from, and the original barbecue sauce, which is on all the supermarket shelves around the country, it's his original recipe. We never changed it, And the testament to how many people buy it is, you know, for 17 years we've been selling it around the country. And
it's good. That's why people are buying it. I mean, exactly. It's fresh. I don't understand how it can taste so fresh.
It's
very sophisticated, too. I mean, you know, when you're talking barbecue, you're not talking rocket scientists.
No.
This stuff is really sophisticated.
If you've got a bathtub and a bottle of ketchup, you can whip up some barbecue sauce. But we have kind of a flavor that transcends all the regions. Barbecue is somewhat regional. The Southeast, you can get those mustard-based sauces, and the Midwest is more molasses. But we've kind of got that blend of molasses and tomato and vinegar that everyone seems to like all over the country.
And you didn't grow up in where did you grow up, in D.C.?
No, I actually grew up in Baltimore.
Baltimore.
A hop, skip, and a jump.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I was impressed. Scott, she's worked with all the greats, and her restaurant in D.C. is just wonderful, Palena. And everybody should go there, and everybody should come check our website and buy her book. And I appreciate your calling us. And,
oh, it was my pleasure.
You're funny. You said, just tell me what to do. Because we've got to claim your line back. So keep in touch and let us know how well the book's doing.
I sure will. And thank you.
You're wonderful, Ann. Thank you. And I'll see you in D.C.
Okay.
And don't forget to give my regards to your chef.
To Frank. I sure will.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye. Okay, now we're back to barbecue.
Well, I'm headed up to Baltimore next month, so I'm going to look her restaurant up while I'm up there.
Oh, it's really good. And I'm going to interview that chef for a newspaper article, because he's originally from near Pittsburgh, which is where we broadcast from. But you were telling me about, there's so many interesting things about this guy's life.
There really were, and I was talking with some of his friends just this past week. There's so many great musicians. That New Stub and Love Stub, and at our place here in Austin, George Thorogood was playing here about a week and a half ago, and you know, he was wearing a Stubbs T-shirt on the stage.
Oh, really?
And it just reminded me of, you know, 20 years ago he was eating at Stubbs Place out in Lubbock, and the life of what this man was, growing up in, you know, abject poverty in Southeast Texas and making it to the level that he did. He was a member of one of the last all-black infantry groups in the U.S. Army.
Oh, yeah, he cooked. He was a mess
sergeant over in the Korean War, and did several tours of duty over there, was injured, got decorated with a Purple Heart.
Really?
Came back, and he didn't want to pick cotton anymore. That was pretty rough work back then.
Yeah.
So he took a welding class when he came back and kind of figured out how to weld his own smoker for smoking meats.
Yeah.
And started working in some restaurants and hotels and learned from some of the best cooks in West Texas at the time. And eventually opened his own restaurant, and he's just such a great, soulful guy. People were just naturally drawn to him.
Oh,
you can see
the charisma just in these photographs.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Just beautiful man, and just had wonderful things to say about everyone, and truly wanted to bring beautiful happiness to everyone that he touched. So that's kind of where the beginning of the book starts, and hopefully all the recipes do him justice. There's only about 20 of them in here that are actually his personal recipes.
Okay.
We've got a few of them that are from our restaurant here that various, you know, chefs and pit masters that have worked here for the years have developed. And then we had a really wonderful woman here named Kate Hayhoe, who knew Stubbs 20 years ago from Austin and had written several cookbooks, and she helped us organize kind of the, you know, how you organize a cookbook and write it in the way that people need to read their recipes, and she developed some recipes, you know, in tribute to Stubbs as well.
I can't picture him developing Thai coconut chicken somehow.
No, that was her. She's got some Asian blood in her. Her mom is Korean, and so she gave a little tribute to his time over in Korea, and made a couple other good recipes that are pretty easy to cook. And what we didn't want to do was have, you know, this very dense, you know, thick, how do you professionally smoke barbecue in a professional smoker's pit, because there's not a whole lot of people that, number one, have the time, nor have, you know, a $15,000 smoker in their backyard. So we tried to make this as accessible as possible, but also keep true to Stubbs and put a bunch of his recipes in.
Well, next week I'm going to be dealing with probably the most thorough book about grills I've ever seen in my life, called Mastering the Grill. Do you know about that one?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Wow.
I buy every barbecue book I can get.
Do you? Well, I've never in my life read anything quite as as complicated. And I mean, it's good. It's sort of, it goes beyond the Bible.
Yeah, it does. It does. And it's, you know, for folks like me that just are enthralled with the technical side of things, it's really interesting. But for most people, you know, they could care less about, you know, how a collagen protein breaks down over time.
I know. So you have read the book. Well,
yeah.
Listen to next week to the authors. Both of them are calling in, and we're going to be interviewing Andrew Schloss and David Joachim.
So oh, that's, great.
Yeah. Now, I want you to plug the book. It's on our website. People can get the book on our website.
Great. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, the book just came out a little over a month ago, just in time for grilling season. It's published by Wiley, and it's called The Stubbs Barbecue Cookbook. And
it includes the barbecue. It also includes sides. And
yeah, it's got sides and appetizers. We've actually, the three desserts that are in here are actually Stubbs' original recipes, too.
Really?
We've got an incredible pecan pie.
I saw that.
And when you're from Texas, pecans are, you know, they're everywhere on the street in the fall, so you just go out and pick them, and you got to figure out what to do with them. So we make pecan pie. Then there's a buttermilk pie in there.
Yeah, what is buttermilk pie?
Well, it's just, you know, it's got some corn syrup in it. It's got real buttermilk in it. It's got some sugar in it. It's a sweet little deal.
I see.
And then we've got some great appetizers in there, and your traditional things like potato salad and coleslaw. Those are straight out of the restaurant. Then we've got some barbecue recipes in there in addition to, you know.
And if people do not want to cook, they can cook. They don't want to make their sauces and marinades and rubs from scratch. They can order Stubbs preserve things, right?
Absolutely. If you don't find the sauces and marinades and spice ribs in your supermarkets, and we're in pretty much all of them around the country, you can go to ilovestubbs.com or buystubbs.com and find all the products there. We'll ship them to you.
Is the label Stubbs Legendary Kitchen? Is that the label?
Yeah, it's got his face on it and the word Stubbs above it. Stubb always demanded that his face be on any bottles that
really
that had his recipes in it, so we still have his face on all the labels.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're going to have to take a break now, but I really appreciate talking to you about it, and listen in next week as well. And I highly recommend these sauces. They're going on the website as special favorite things.
Great. Well, I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, Scott, thank you.
Okay, have a good summer.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We'll take a break now.
Furnace working okay? How's your heating bills? You know, no kidding, an old or inefficient furnace can really add to the cost of keeping your home warm. If you want to keep costs down, get your furnace looked at, and I recommend Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning for that. The technicians at Bolster to Heart have been performing routine maintenance and installing high-efficiency heating and air conditioning systems in Pittsburgh since 1977. They're EPA-certified professionals who are continually factory-trained in all the latest installation and service techniques. They offer free estimates and don't even charge extra for Saturday service. They're a quality dealer you can trust. Stay warm this winter at the lowest possible cost. Call Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning at 412-367-3900. Maintenance or installation, Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning, 412-367-3900.
You're listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WLFP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting. Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial-up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers? Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
We usually are very cautious with our investment money.
Then we got this email about this great deal on the internet.
They promised us a 75% return on our money in 90 days. We couldn't resist.
That was a mistake.
For information on avoiding investment scams, call the Pennsylvania Securities Commission, 1-800-600-0007.
Sponsored by the Pennsylvania Securities Commission. Edward G. Rendell, Governor.
Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu. Remember to check the website, www.onthemenuradio.com. We've certainly been moving around with the interesting cookbooks, and now we're going to take a break from the cookbook phase here of the program and talk to someone who has a new product, Dennis Van Lanningham.
Yeah.
That's the English right. I'm from Rose City Delicacies. Dennis has and his sister own this company. I thought listeners would be really interested in how you came about setting up this company.
Well, basically what we did was my sister has been producing this mustard for close to 25 years now.
How did she get this recipe, these family recipes? I was sort of curious about
that.
You know,
it was something that was just handed down and has been in the family for, you know, a long time. And what she did is she has taken it and tweaked it a little bit, changed it a little bit, and developed it to where it is today. And,
well, I mean, was it traditional in the family to have it laced with Grand Marnier, triple sec?
Yeah, triple sec. Actually, what it is, it's a base formula. It's an egg and butter-based formula. So we take the eggs and the butter, along with other ingredients, produce the base, and then we add the distilled spirit to it. And then the base formula, which starts out very creamy, smooth, with a very rich flavor because of the eggs and the butter, it then takes on the characteristics of the distilled spirit once we add that to it.
I see.
So I interrupted you.
You were telling us how you came about getting this actually into a company after making the mustards for 25 years.
Well, my sister made it for the holidays and gave it to family members and friends for stocking stuffers or whatever the case may be. And we always had it with whatever we were having, whether it be prime rib or turkey or ham at the holidays. And everybody said, gee, we should market this thing. And ironically enough, I ran into an old high school friend of mine that I hadn't seen for 25 years. And he worked for a very large company here in Portland that manufactures condiments. And I got talking to him, and he said, yeah, you know, we do those things all the time. And so one thing led to another, and I went
Isn't
out and
nice,
lived with
huh?
them. And next thing you know, we had a product ready to go on the market.
That's amazing. You ought to broadcast who he is, because he'll give him lots of business. I'm sure everybody has a product, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's Beaverton Foods. They're out in Beaverton. They're out in Hillsboro, Oregon. They produce a lot of products under their own name, Beaver Mustard, Beaver Horseradish, things like that.
Oh, so they even know about mustards.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they produce a lot of mustards, and they actually produce it, bottle it, label it, and package it for us.
Well, I think people looking to try this mustard should expect that they're going to get more than something they put on bread and a ham sandwich, right?
Exactly. You know, most traditional mustards are vinegar and mustard seed-based along those lines. We have yet to see an egg and butter-based mustard in the marketplace anywhere.
See, I had never even heard of that. I was rather surprised when I read the ingredients.
It's unique. It's different. You know, mustard is really not the focus, and we find that a lot of people that we talk to when we're doing tastings and trade shows and different things like that, if they don't like mustard, they're really kind of our prime target, because mustard isn't the focus. It's the actual flavor of the spirit.
It's sweet, actually.
Yeah, the Grand Marnier is a sweeter mustard with an orange zest. We actually had to send a prototype jar of that mustard over to Paris, France.
Oh, and, Grand Marnier to test it, huh?
Yeah, they actually, Grand Marnier had to approve the flavoring and the packaging. We signed a licensing agreement with them, which allows us to use their trademark name on our label, and it also secures us as the person or the company that can use the Grand Marnier, or the only Grand Marnier mustard that you're going to find out there.
Well, let's just, you have two varieties, flavors that I just mentioned. Are you going to be developing more of those?
We are. In fact, we have some in R&D, and in fact, I just received some samples back on Friday. We are looking at adding a couple more distilled spirit mustards. We are looking at some of our local wineries.
That'd be really good. I guess they do white wine vinegars, don't they?
Oh,
mustards,
yeah.
Rather.
Yeah.
Some of the uses here, I can just see this shaping up to be a really wonderful gift packet, too, by the way, with the different flavors. It's called City of Roses, Rose City, rather, because Portland is the City of Roses, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so it has, for example, how to make cranberry mustard glaze. By adding the dried cranberries in with this mustard and spreading it on pork loin or ham, baking it. Then there's another glaze you have. Let's see, what you use with brown sugar, and that's a ham glaze. How to make a hollandaise with this? Amazing.
Yeah, the tangy triple sec is not as sweet a mustard, and it has a bit of a bite to it. Some people think that it has a little horseradish in it, but it doesn't.
Okay.
It's just actually the distilled spirit that once we put it into the base formula, it makes the mustard have a little bit of a bite to it. It's not something that's going to, you know, knock your socks off or curl your hair or anything like that, but you'll definitely know there's a little something there. And the hollandaise sauce is that's the mustard to use for the hollandaise sauce. It comes out great, and it's actually very simple to make.
Yeah, and you can make salad dressings out of it. You can spoon it onto a fish.
Mm-hmm.
There are all these different, you make deviled eggs. I mean, deviled eggs are hot now all of a sudden. I have no idea why. They take up so much time to make those things.
Well, one of our favorite ways to eat fish is to put a little bit of the Grand Marnier over the top of it, salmon in particular, because there's a lot of salmon out here in the Northwest, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
But just put a little bit over the top, a thin layer, wrap it in foil, and bake it. It comes out fantastic.
Right. And you recommend in your jar that it goes well with cheeses?
Oh, yeah. You can use it as a dipping sauce.
It would be great with pretzels?
Oh, pretzels, raw carrots, bell peppers. If you like bell peppers, something about the Grand Marnier and the bell peppers, you just dip it straight in there and eat it. It's wonderful, the sweetness of the bell peppers along with the mustard.
I did it with asparagus today, cooked asparagus, and I'm not sure it worked. Grand Marnier creamy mustard with cooked asparagus is probably not a good use of it.
Well, but I'll tell you, the hollandaise sauce. If you take the hollandaise sauce and put it over asparagus or, say, over broccoli with a nice piece of beef, it comes out fantastic.
Wow. How about your website?
The website is up. You know, we've just been in business about 18 months now, so we're adding to it all the time. There are some recipes there. There's a little history on the company and who we are and how we got started. And we're continuing to add to it and develop it more all the time.
Well, that's great. The website is?
www.rosecitydelicacies.com.
Great. We have another caller. Before you go, why don't you say hello to a chef who's calling in. You might even tell him about your mustard.
Fantastic.
Yes. Hello, Chef.
Hello, how are you?
How are you?
Good.
Chef Walter Staub, is it?
Stabe.
Stabe. I knew I was going to do it the wrong way.
Yeah, no problem.
Who is has a really elegant book out called Black Forest Cuisine, the classic blending of European flavors. And you also, you own or you run the tavern?
I operate the tavern. You can own it. It's owned by the National Park Service.
Oh, that's right. I knew there was a catch.
Yep.
You operate it.
Yep.
podcast. Well, anyhow, I have on the other line, he's just going off now, Dennis Van Lanningham, who has a company called Rose City Delicacies that make these really remarkable egg and cream and egg and butter-based mustards.
Gosh, that's interesting.
Yes, it is. Anyhow, and probably the background would be handed down from Germany, would it not?
Yes.
So, there you go. So, Dennis?
Yes.
Thank you very much for calling in. You're welcome to talk to Chef for a while if you want.
Okay, fantastic.
Okay.
That sounds great.
Well, better than the mustard, so I can play around with it. Actually, in my book, we use a lot of mustard in the Black Forest. You know, a lot.
Yeah.
Mustard
now, define your book. For
mustards in the Roulade. I don't think there's some recipes, but by and large, mustard is very much used in our cuisine. You know, throughout. So that's a dominant thing, and I love to work with mustard.
Yeah, well, I'd love to send you out some samples.
Yeah, that'd be great. And maybe, who knows, I can make you more popular than you already are here in Philadelphia.
That would never hurt. That wouldn't hurt at all.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
Now, define for us Black Forest cuisine. It's a certain area in Germany, but it has characteristics, does it not?
Oh, correct. I think that to really understand the Black Forest, you've got to step back just a little bit into early history, because the Black Forest is very different from the rest of Germany, and that's maybe the reason I wanted to write this book forever. I'm from there. I grew up there. I did my apprenticeship there before I traveled the world and ended up in the United States. But I think to remember is that the Edict of Nantes, when the Catholic Church really ruled that that you were not allowed to practice any other religion than Catholic, all the Lutherans and the Protestants left. We call them Huguenots, and they moved down to what you call today Alsace-Lorraine. They moved on the other side of the Rhine River, which is the Black Forest. They moved into Switzerland near Basel, this whole area, the German part of Switzerland, and settled there, and obviously brought along their philosophy, their methodology, their way of going about it. That's why the cuisine, right, this little packet, is very different from the rest. Not to say that there is not other German foods in it, but there's very different approach to cooking, by and large.
The only thing I ever knew that before I saw your book that came from there was the chocolate cake.
That's what everyone knows. That's the Black Forest ham is at the end of it. But it's
and
very
ham.
Different. It's,
just
it's also a philosophy. Gastronomy is in people's heart, you know, and that's why it's very different. And that's a unique little packet of Germany.
Right. Did we define what's different about it altogether? I mean, you seem to be using a lot of offcuts of meat.
Of course, correct, yes. Because it's, you're absolutely right, because it's a frugal approach. There's a lot of roast, there's rouladen, there's like the popiettes, there's stews, absolutely correct. There's a lot of, but I think the difference is when you go through the book and you study the recipes, you see there's a lot of marinating involved and situations like that. That's what makes the difference, you know. There's a way of going about it. And remember, the book is broken down into home, cafe, guest house, and hotels. Now, in the hotels, you can go way upscale because there's really no limit, you know. Matter of fact, I tell people always, there's small towns in the Black Forest have more Michelin 2- and 3-star restaurants by square footage than, let's say, Paris. Believe that?
Yes. No.
And that's the reason for that is that young chefs in the Black Forest travel the world, go back home to their family business, and then inspire maybe a guest house in a little tiny village, and they're going to have the best food that you've ever had, you know, kind of like that's part of the tradition, you know.
So that's what a guest house is.
The guest house is really a restaurant. In the old days, a guest house would be a restaurant, maybe with a couple of sleeping rooms, you know, like an auberge, you know what I mean?
Like a guest house, yeah.
Correct, guest house. And correct. But then a lot of you can have a guest house without any rooms. You don't have to have rooms. Cafes, obviously, are very dominant throughout the Black Forest and to the cities in the Black Forest, where everybody meets and hangs out and eats great pastry and drinks coffee that is very precious. We don't have the bottomless cup of coffee as this country has, so it's a little different, you know what I'm saying? And they have savories in it as well. And then, obviously, the hotels go way upscale, and at home is very frugal. You're absolutely right. You picked right through it.
Well, I mean, it's so beautifully photographed.
I wanted to show the food. I did the pictures all myself. I wanted to show the food as it is. I do buy books myself, like many other chefs, that the picture is so highly skilled that you can barely recreate it. I think most of the dishes in there, I would say 98%, anybody can do. And of fact, the book has done extremely well. It only came out last November. It has done extremely well. I've got nothing but compliments. People who are afraid of making chocolate souffle calling me and say, gosh, I made it for the first time and it worked. And I said, well, I think this is what books should do. But remember, it's also my third book. So you learn from the first couple, you know what I mean?
Yes. Now, can you hold on a bit
so
we can take a break?
Sure.
Great. Take a break.
You take your six-year-old to the playground. You watch her go down the slide, then run over to the swings. Another mother strikes up a conversation. You take your eye off your daughter for just a few seconds. You look back at the swings. And she's gone. Your heart drops into your stomach. You jump up, your eyes searching. You cry out her name.
Lily? Lily?
From the top of the slide, you hear a voice.
Mommy, watch me!
Every parent knows that feeling. Imagine if she were actually abducted. Go to wirelessamberalerts.org. Sign up for free Amber Alerts on your cell phone. When an Amber Alert is issued in the areas you've chosen, you'll receive a free text message. If you spot the vehicle, the suspect, or the child described in the alert, call 911. Sign up today at wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. This message brought to you by the Wireless Foundation, the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
A message for older drivers from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
If you find that you have to drive at night, travel in well-lighted areas when possible.
Make sure your headlights are clean.
Keep your windshield clear, both inside and out.
Avoid driving at night in the rain or other foul weather.
Also, try to avoid busy streets or other stressful situations.
It's what makes an older driver a wiser and safer driver.
For a free brochure on older driver safety, call 1-800-993-7222.
Hi, my name's Maria, and I'm alive today because I was given CPR last year by Rick.
Who took a class with the Red Cross after I received blood from Jamal, who gave blood after being encouraged by my friend Angela.
Who helped Jamal's whole family get the help and support they needed after losing their home to a fire.
When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. By getting involved with the Red Cross, you never know how many people your actions will affect. To get involved, visit redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
Welcome back to On the Menu. We still have Dennis Van Lanningham of Rose City Delicacies, who makes glorious mustards, and Chef Walter Stabe of Black Forest Cuisine, who actually runs or operates the City Tavern, the historic City Tavern in Philadelphia. We're talking mainly now about, they were sharing mustard stories, but we're talking now about this fabulous cookbook that that Chef wrote. And I was asking him when we were off air, why was Russian eggs, which I'd never heard of, listed here as the most popular dish in the Black Forest? Because it has caviar on it, two different kinds.
Well, actually, you know, when you read a recipe, you remember, you look at it, it's all root vegetables. You know, carrots, celery root, and obviously potato. And the peas really, really winter extremely well in the root cellar. So you remember, the Black Forest really operates much like when I first came to the city town, like the 18th century America did. Basically, we can harvest, you harvest, you can it, you package it, but you also have root cellars. I remember always having horseradish, celery roots, and carrots in the root cellar. So this dish comes together rather quickly because all you do is you cut your brunoise or the little dice on the vegetable, and the potatoes, you steam them quickly, and then a little mayonnaise and mustard, very important, the mustard goes in the dressing, little seasoning, hard-boiled eggs on top, a little mayonnaise goes over it, and obviously the caviar wouldn't be something for homemakers. Now, my mother always used caviar, but it was not real caviar, it was imitation caviar, what you call in this country, like whitefish caviar. So it looks pretty, but it's not caviar at all, because we didn't have this kind of budget for our food. But it was a regular thing, I would think, if we know we had company, we make a big platter for any special events it happens about, and obviously the restaurants as well do it. It's a very delicious little easy to come together dish.
What are some of the other favorites in this book that you want to just point people to?
Well, some of my favorites are, like you said it earlier, and you have obviously a keen eye to see through that, are dishes that take a little bit time for preparation, are inexpensive to buy, but the labor you have to install, like the roulade, the pourpied of beef, which is a thin, like you can use a top round or bottom round. You put plenty of mustard on it. Again, there goes the mustard. Mustard, onion, bacon, parsley, pickle, roll it up, braise it, and then finish it with a red wine sauce, simmer it really, really nicely, get a beautiful flavor of the mustard and the bacon and the onions coming out, and then you serve it with a nice mashed potato, maybe sweet and sour red cabbage. Or you get more fancy, you take a whole veal breast and you stuff it with a bread stuffing. Or you do a nice goulash. It doesn't have to be just beef. You can also do a pork goulash with sauerkraut under it. And there's a lot of Hungarian influxes, because way back when there was one empire, a lot of the Hungarian dishes were served, and it was important, and it kind of stayed behind. So paprika and spice is much more dominant in the Black Forest than most people may think.
I wondered about that.
Yeah, that's where it's from.
Oh, interesting.
And it stayed in there because the people like it. As a matter of fact, if you go to the Oktoberfest and you eat a shashlik, which is nothing else but a kebab, maybe it could be done with pork, with beef, they serve a very tangy paprika sauce over. And so paprika stayed kind of in this neighborhood very dominantly. And the food is not, when you go to northern Germany, you find a lot of plain foods, not a lot of seasoned. But in this packet, where I'm talking about the Black Forest, you find a lot of spicy food, a lot of seasoned food, you know, like goulash soup, goulashes, other stews that have some oomph to it, a little bit of character. This is the Black Forest.
See, there are unexpected dishes such as sautéed fennel.
Yeah, well, that's a big one down there, because I think it comes that we are so close to France. We are literally, from my home over to Strasbourg is in half an hour. So remember, in the old days, it was all one. So fennel is another vegetable that grows really, really easy. It doesn't take any care. And so fennel, we use fennel not just for bouillabaisse like in this country, but braised fennel with the sweetbreads is one of my favorite dishes as well. And
This
time of year, obviously, you have the biggest event, which is the white asparagus. You know, now is the big asparagus season, where the white asparagus gets served in all the restaurants in the Black Forest. I have a couple events coming here in June.
So that's a big sight for... That's a big sight for white asparagus, the Black
it's
Forest?
It's a big happening. They have an asparagus queen. They're serving nice. If you look in the book and you see the smoked trout and asparagus salad, again, topped off with a little caviar, it's a very elegant happening. And most restaurants in the Black Forest literally change their menus for 6 to 8 weeks and put an entire white asparagus menu in it. We have your asparagus with other accompaniments. It's a big, big, big happening. The asparagus grows near Heidelberg, as most people know, in the town of Schwetzingen, and people anticipate it all year. It's almost like Beaujolais Nouveau, and you're asking the new wine.
All right.
People, and this year, the season was earlier because it was so warm in Germany that the asparagus popped through the ground faster, and so they opened the season earlier than normal by like 2 weeks. And I fly them in all the way from Europe and do this once in a great moon, just for a few people that can appreciate it. It's a different taste than the other asparagus, as we know, the green one, but it lends itself extremely well to other dishes, you know.
So this is Spargelzeit.
Spargelzeit, you got it exactly. Yeah. Spargel Festival, Spargelzeit. Spargel is asparagus, Zeit means now, so it's a big thing, yeah.
So you have a section in the back of the book where you have holidays and festivals, and you talk about that.
Oh, I could have
that.
So much more. There was not enough room. I put Christmas in it. There was so much more that I could have done. We have Carnival. I mean, everybody thinks beignets come from New Orleans. I hate to disappoint everybody.
They're not German, are they?
Yes.
I thought they were French.
No, well, French, German, Alsace, the same thing.
German,
yeah.
Alsace. Well, all the great French chefs come from Alsace.
Well, that's where I'm from. See, there you go.
See, there you go.
we all from, but it's true. You got it right on there. That's absolutely. You name them all down the list. But
exactly, one after the other.
We've had, and beignets, my mother used to, beignets you make at carnival time. We call it Fasnachtküchle. You got the recipe is actually in there, and it's a fun event. And that's why there's so many more others that I could had to put into it, but there's one so much, you know, you can always get in the book.
You probably will. But I really want to direct people, if you have an outmoded image of the Black Forest, I think you should check out this book. And just go right to our website. It's listed already, and you can order it. And it's a gorgeous tabletop, coffee table book also, because it's so beautifully, every dish is so beautifully presented and beautifully photographed.
And most of the dishes you can almost cook out of not quite a convenience store, but any supermarket of the ingredients. There's a handful of things like a little truffle and a pheasant, a few little things, but by and large, everything is readily available. There's nothing too esoteric in there. You don't have to go and spend dollars on truffle oil and what else have you. You know, it's simple, straightforward, a lot of good recipes.
I would be remiss if I didn't talk about a little bit about City Tavern, being formerly of Philadelphia myself. Dennis, do you know about this? About
No, I don't.
I think you need to bring us up to speed,
Chef. Okay, real quick.
Chef,
I'll make it real quick for you. City Tavern first opened in 1773, and it was the best restaurant in British North America. It was so successful and so well thought after that after the Revolution, 3 years later, and after George Washington went up to New York, and then afterwards when John Adams came down and when the Capitol was in Philadelphia for 10 years, when John Adams said he's never seen anything finer in his life until he stepped into the City Tavern. He called it the most genteel tavern in North America. And I think what happened was is the tavern had high standards because the harbor was right next to it, literally across the street. Products came from the West Indies via the trade routes that started from London, Seville, Madeira, the West Indies, as we call today Jamaica, Haiti, Cuba, and then into Philadelphia, which is a short hour, day and a half. Recipes that I have from the era dating had mangoes, papaya, pineapple, bananas, nutmeg, curry, you name it. Everything was already available then in this part of the world. You had ice cream shops, confection shops. After the French Revolution, because of the relationship France had with America, all the French artisans got immediately asylum here. So you had confiserie, pastry chefs, very sophisticated. And the tavern kind of was on the forefront until about 1854, had a couple of fires burned down, became a parking lot. In 1948, during the Truman administration, when they decided to save what was left of Independence Park and create this national park, they said they had to rebuild this tavern because for people to take a glimpse in the past. So we are a historical museum, culinary-wise speaking. All the recipes are researched. They're in my first two books, the City Tavern Cookbook and the Baking Book. We make everything from scratch. Or I would say everything like 95%. I don't churn my own butter and I don't roast my own coffee. It's about the extent of it. Everything else is fresh, and I have a philosophy that's from the farm to the table as fresh as possible, which we have here every day. And it's a large restaurant. We do a lot of covers, big kitchen staff. I have 100 employees. Everybody's dressed in costumes. Everybody knows the history, and also the beverages are along as well. So it's quite an eye-opener when people come in and say, wow, this is how they used to entertain in the 18th century, because before the Industrial Revolution and fast food came about, dining was a real happening. There was really entertainment. Yeah. Take away all the electronics, take away all the stuff that we have. Going out was a major happening, you know?
Now, so how about giving us, we have less than 2 minutes to wrap this, so website for the tavern.
Just go to citytavern.com. www.citytavern.com.
Right.
You get in, you get a good glimpse, you can see it. We have a store, you can buy some of the other books, you can some of other things, you can see it all. Better yet, come to Philadelphia and come visit me here and have some of our great cuisine.
I'm going to take you up on that.
I'm looking forward to it.
You know, my Philadelphia restaurant was very near where you are.
Yeah, good.
Second and South. Yeah.
Oh, great.
One last thing from Dennis.
Yes.
Do you want to say one last thing to our listeners?
Oh, geez.
I hate doing that to people.
Yeah, check out our website. Check out where you can locally buy it or online buy it. And, look at our recipes, see what you think of those. I'd love to get the chef some samples so he can test them out in his
neck. Well, thank you. I think you have a deal there, Chef.
No problem. I'll let you know about it. Absolutely.
And the last word from you, go get this cookbook, right?
Absolutely, no. I will tell you that, and this is, I'm not saying it because it's my book, but it has done extremely well reviewed, extremely well sold. I couldn't ask for any more. And I tell you, what's the beauty of it is all the emails I get from the people that have bought and said, gosh, you were right, you're not giving us a sales job. It actually, everything works. I spent 3 years on it, a lot of time. I gained 20 pounds. I still got it on me from eating all the recipes over and over. I'm still trying to take it off. But
Buy
the book
here
and
comes
see
the music.
What a different region right. Black Forest really is.
Well, the music's pushing us out of here, so bye-bye to you guys. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you for having me on, and make sure you come to Philly.
I will.
Let me know that I'm here.
I do.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank
and
you.
And I look forward for the mustard. Well, I'll give you my honest opinion as a mustard connoisseur.
Till next week, same time.
No, all right.
Bye-bye.
Jazzin' Around with David J. is next on The Edge, AM 1550.